Stay golden.
Hurricane.
Hello and welcome back to the Golden Hurricast. We are a weekly podcast covering Golden Hurricane athletics at the University of Tulsa. I'm Ryan Token.
I'm Matt Rechtine, and it is conference championship week. Unfortunately, while the men have yet to kick off their run to the conference title that we're all expecting, the women's season, at least the their American Athletic Conference season, ended today with a loss to UCF. It was kind of a bummer of a way to, I mean, I don't want to say end their season because, you know, there's still the possibility of some sort of, whether that's the NIT again, whether I don't know if there's a women's CBI or anything, you know, there's no guarantee that their season is over. But I don't think we expected them to be a one and done inside the conference tournament.
Rough, man. You look at they started off this year 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 and 3, 11 and 3, 12 and 3, 13 and 3, 14 and 3, 15, 15 and 3 until everything flipped. They have now lost 10 of their last 12 games and end the season and end the regular season plus conference tournament at 17 and 3 and 7 and 9 in the American, and would be 7 and 10, but I'm not counting that tournament loss as a conference loss. I don't know if you typically do that or not, actually, but I'm gonna go with no. But yeah, just such a crazy turnaround there that this happened. Already out of the tournament, would have loved to win a game or two there. I don't know anything about the feasibility of whether they make the NIT with this record and this how it's gone down the stretch here. It's very similar to last year, you know, and we've talked about that on the show before too. Last season, you all probably remember, got off to a 10-0 start to the season, and then things kind of flipped on themselves, and we got into conference play and didn't do that great in conference play last year either. This year, much of the same. This year, I would you know, probably put more of the blame toward injuries. We've been dealing with some serious ones, but still, the record is almost identical. Last year, we went 16-10 overall. Again, just to reiterate, 17-13 this season, 5-8 in the AAC last season, 7-9 this season. So pretty similar and generally worse. And we got an NIT bid last year. So I know there's a chance. I don't, looking back at that record from last season, that feels surprising to me that we even got one. I don't know if we talked about that last year and I'm just forgetting, but I don't know. Do you remember, did we expect to make the NIT last year? Or was that, I feel like it was a surprise.
It was definitely a surprise to me. I didn't think there, I thought like CBI, but I think I want to say went through and realized there isn't one or something. Cause I remember being pleasantly surprised when that announcement came out. And so I don't know if it is like a just ongoing invitation in where if a team declines, then it just moves on to the next team. Maybe that's what happened or part of it. I don't know. I mean, we are a,
there is a WBI, just following up on that real quick. I don't know if it's the same organization that does the CBI. It's just called the Women's Basketball Invitational. It's March 16th to 19th.
Okay. That's so soon. Well, I guess March Madness starts at the same time.
Unless that was last year's, but like I'm on their website. That's the main thing on their website. So I got to
assume it's this year. I think I'm also just in disbelief that the men's March Madness tournament starts like
I know.
March 16th, like almost the same day. So
yeah,
10 days from now, I mean, there's gonna be a lot of basketball.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's where I'm kind of like, I don't want to say, oh yeah, we're a lock for the NIT, just because I don't really know if that's true. I don't know what the reason why we got it last year is specifically, but if you're looking at last year and you're comparing this season to last, if we got one last year, we should get one this year.
Yeah, that's how it, you know, logically that makes sense. I just, you know, everything can change from, you know, where is everybody else in college basketball and where are we in the net right now, which just for reference, we are 103. That does not account for today's loss. The UCF game happened today, the conference tournament game. So that was a loss. Massey, I think, also isn't quite updated for today, or at least it wasn't several hours ago when I looked at it. But we were number 115 in the Massey, number 103 in the net. So I don't know. Who knows? I mean, maybe that's enough to get it done, but it feels like a stretch, but it felt like a stretch last year and it still happened. So don't count it out.
Yeah. They don't have historical for like last season for Massey ratings, do they?
Good question.
I don't know why they wouldn't, but I feel like we were in a pure analytics or like ranking system, like would have been way lower last season than we would be right now this season.
Yeah. I'm not seeing them for last season. I have it in a pretty narrow window, so maybe I'm just missing something, but they don't have much filtering at all. They have the current rankings, and let me see if I click on Tulsa here, I can go back to, you must be able to switch the years. That'd be crazy. Okay. Yeah, you can. Okay. So last year, I cannot figure, this is such a weird website. Last season, it looks like we ended at 110. Again, this season right now, we're 115. So it was like the exact same. Yeah. So weird. Ranking 110. Our strength of schedule last season was 136. This season, it's 107. So a little bit tougher of a strength of schedule. We had the 74th ranked defense at the end of the year last season. This season, or did I say defense? I meant offense. 74th ranked offense at the end of the season last season. 93rd this season, so a drop there. The 199th ranked defense last season, and it got worse this year. 211th in defense in 2023. This is all according to the MasseyRatings.com. So interesting stuff. I mean, that makes you think that there's probably another shot here for an NIT bid. Who knows? I wonder. I feel like TU has never really been one to shoot for the paid invitationals, you know, where you have to pay all this money to go. And I wonder if they would do that if they didn't get an NIT bid. I know that, you know, Angie Nelp, she's still trying to build here. It's her second year. Making the NIT in her first season was awesome. Not making it this year would be a bummer. So I wonder, or not making any kind of postseason play would be a bummer. So I wonder if they would do that. I assume it's much cheaper to pay for the women's CBI or the equivalent, the women's basketball invitational, than it is for the men. That's a guess. But I assume it's not too bad. And there's no way the men are going anywhere. So if we had a budget in place for like paying for postseason play somewhere, maybe you just give it to the women this time. I don't know. It'd be fun. I'd watch for sure. I don't care if we pay to play. It's postseason basketball. It's always fun.
Yeah. I feel like there would be a good reason to, with a young team with a lot of players, like just give players more opportunity to play. I mean, you could bring in even more freshmen, give them more minutes than they had during the previous rest of the season, you know, just to get them in the system early, get them actually like minutes and substantial like practice and rhythm and getting, you know, up to speed with college.
Totally.
Not to say, it's not like, oh, these people have never played, but you know, any game that you can add to it, I feel like, why not? That's just going to make us that much better and that much more prepared for next season.
Yeah, it all matters. Every game matters. And you're looking at, you mentioned some freshmen, right? We got the AAC awards for the season started coming out today, and I think they're all out by now. Array Young, our true freshman this season, made the all freshman team in the American. So get her more minutes. There's several freshmen who've gotten serious playing time this season. And every game matters, like you're saying. So I would be all for that. I mean, it just makes sense. So hopefully it happens. Hopefully you get some kind of postseason play, whether it's an earned bid to the NIT or a paid bid plus, you know, reputation for the WBI. But we will see. Let's talk a little bit about we've played UCF twice in a row now since our last episode. We were just talking about this before we jumped on and actually started recording. I think we recorded last week on Tuesday, and then we played UCF in the regular season finale that was at home, I think, on Wednesday, and won that game by double digits, won it by 10 at home. And then you get to follow that up. You get to take that momentum into the conference tournament. Maybe that's, you know, some people would say it's tough to beat the same team two times in a row. You just played them. But anyway, I was feeling good about that. But I know you watched this final regular season game, Matt. So can you break that one down and talk about what went well in that one versus, you know, and then we'll get into today's game?
Yeah. Well, I just want to kind of, the point you mentioned, it's hard to beat the same team twice. If you watched today's broadcast, you will know that it is A, hard to beat the same team two times in a row, and B, hard to beat the same team three times in a season.
Yeah.
Because I believe that was mentioned 10 or 12 times by the commentators during the game. Yeah. So last week, and I was kind of talking about this when we were just before we actually started recording, but you know, I thought we were going to lose that game for a long time. You look at the first half of that game, when we had 24 points at one point, and it was one free throw, a single 2-point basket. The rest were threes. but we were shooting barely 30% from three. So it did not seem sustainable. Like, we just did not have that much of an interior game. And I think we've talked about that a lot this season. But in the second half, you know, we ended up shooting 50% from three in this game. And so that's, again, the reason why we won. And I think the reason we won a lot this season is because when we shoot well, like, we can shoot like lights out against teams. And so UCF shot 34% overall, 40% from three. That was pretty good. They out rebounded us by almost 10, but I mean, 50% versus 40%, 47% overall compared to their 34. Like, we were just weren't missing shots, especially like during clutch time. You had Maya Mayberry came out and just like put up 20. Maddie Biddle started off slow, put up 10 in the second half. Tamira Poindexter finished with 20. I mean, everybody just started hitting shots. And some of those bad turnovers that we've seen in the past didn't matter as much because, you know, we were able to just outscore them in terms of efficiency. So that's kind of what happened in the first game. And then if you flip that to today.
Well, some comments on the first game. It looked like pretty much all the fun happened in the fourth quarter. I'm looking at the box score up at the top of ESPN here, and 25-18 in the first quarter. That's a pretty high scoring, entertaining first quarter. Second quarter of this game, 7-4 Tulsa. 7-4 in a quarter. That is a lot of nothing happening right there. So we go in to halftime, close game, like you're saying, but a lot of nothing kind of happening at the end of that half. Third quarter, 14-12 UCF. So back and forth again. And then the fourth quarter, we just blitz them. 33-17 in that fourth quarter. We just smoked them. And that was the game right there. It's like you're saying, I assume, and this is just me putting some conjecture out there, it seems like probably weren't shooting very well up until the fourth, and then people just started lighting it up in the fourth quarter, and that was the game there. You mentioned 6 of 9 from Maya Mayberry. I wonder how many of those came in quarter number four there. Tamira hit three threes. Pretty cool. So, yeah, fourth quarter magic happened. Got that win. But then I'll give it back to you, Matt, for what you were going to say for this next game, because it definitely didn't go the same in the tournament here.
Yeah, so for today's game, you know, again, UCF out-rebounds us. They actually had the same number of rebounds, total rebounds. They're 41 total rebounds to our 37. So it was actually much closer, much better on our side than it, you know, was last game. Definite improvement. But our shooting was not on. We shot 20% from three. 30% overall.
And not gonna happen. Gonna win.
UCF pretty much played the exact same game they played last week. but we weren't shooting, and to me that's a huge part of the difference. Like, turnovers pretty similar, 12 last week to 14 today. You know, we made all our free throws, but we're not a team that gets a lot of free throws. I think last week we had 14 in that game versus 8 today. And we were gifted some of those free throws last week because UCF, their coach got a tech at one point. Deserved. I think she was like halfway on the court screaming at the ref when she got the tech last week.
And so, I mean, look at the free throws. I mean, we gave UCF 22 attempts at the free throw line. That is crazy compared to 8 for us, which makes sense. We never, like you're saying, Matt, we never shoot that many because we just shoot threes all game. So we're not getting to the line. But UCF, 22. Fortunately, they only made 14 of them. But still, I mean, I say fortunately. We still lost by 13 points in this game. Final score was 69-53. I don't know. Maybe you said that at the top. But man, like, you're right. Did not get killed on the glass in this one. Didn't turn it over too much. You know, 14 isn't wonderful, but it's not bad either, really. Hit all of our free throws, albeit only 8 of them, you know, attempts. But the big difference here was the one you already said, could not hit the three, 20.6% there. And then the fouls, we fouled them way too much and put them on the line for a lot of those fouls. And yeah, they only made 63% of them, but 63% of 22 is 14. So they got 14 extra points there. That's the game right there in free throws, basically. So tough stuff right there, but that's how it goes.
Yeah. And you've got to wonder, like, how frustrated our players were getting, you know, getting called for so many fouls. And obviously I'm not saying it's lopsided one way or the other. Like, we are not a team that is designed to draw fouls. So I'm not saying like, oh, why do they have more fouls? But, you know, just getting called for that many fouls, like, to my point, Dexter was ejected from this game in the fourth quarter.
Oh,
with about 4 minutes, somewhere between the 5 to 6 minute mark of the, you know, left in the game, which
ouch
sucks, because she was our MVP, 16 points. Nobody else was having a fantastic game. And so when she was out, it was pretty much done. Like, as soon as that happened, it was kind of over. But she pulled somebody down by their hair and had a technical and an intentional and was ejected, which was just super frustrating.
Ouch. It had to probably be about over already. We lost this game by 16.
Yeah.
She got pulled with 5 minutes. I don't know what the score was with those 5 minutes left, but it could have been. It could have been close.
It wasn't super close. It was probably already an 11-point game. We had started to make some of our shots, but UCF was matching us, which is the problem. So it's like, even if we tried to get momentum for ourselves and we're doing the positive things, UCF essentially just killed it by, you know, just scoring a bucket or doing something. Like, we just couldn't sustain a run in the back half. So unfortunate, but I don't know. I do think beating a team or playing a team twice in less than a week is tough. Just because you know, there's a lot, not just tape. There's a lot of literally, hey, remember this from last week kind of stuff that goes into it. And I think UCF did a really good job of exploiting that this week after the game.
Yeah. So maybe we'll do some like final grades of the season or whatever, you know, once we know for sure that the season's over. But just off the top of your head right now, thinking of the Tulsa women, how they did this year, 17-13, 7-9 in the AAC, conference tournament's over. We'll see what happens with the postseason or not. How do you grade this year off the top? We don't have to go in depth or anything. Maybe we can do that next week or whenever we do our next one. But what's your first inclination of like how the season went for Anginelle and the squad?
Yeah. So I'll give it a B minus. So on my scale, a C is going to be average. A B minus is going to be, it was a positive season, but I think, and this is not even expectations from the start to now, but midway through the season where I thought we would be versus where we finished, did not line up, unfortunately. I think we talked a lot about it last week, just whatever happened after, you know, we went 15-3. Like that sucked. That dragged it down from a potential another A season in a row, all the way down to, you know, it was a positive because there was still the hope or the thought that we could have gone further, which I think in and of itself is a positive for the program, but slightly disappointing with how, you know, it like leaves a sour taste in your mouth.
Yeah, I think B minus is fair. I was going to put it at a C, C or C plus, just because the last several, you know, several weeks now have been really, really rough. But, you know, and as we discussed last week and today already, I think a large part of that blame goes to injuries. lost Caitlin Levings early on, and she's been kind of in and out and hasn't played in a while now. And she was supposed to be kind of like one of our big forces, you know, rebounders to help us out on that side of the ball where we're seriously lacking, as we all know. And then also then, you know, a month ago or so, we lose Jessica Evans for the year, and we knew she was out for the year. And that all coincides with this losing streak. So it's like these two things are definitely related. So how much do you take away from a grade for those reasons? Probably not that much, because those are two of your impact players. And, you know, you still have a lot of talent on the team outside of those two, but those are some serious dogs out there playing. So I think B minus is probably fair. Like, if the record is maybe a C, but I think you bump it up with the fact that you know that you lost these people for the year, and the record would almost certainly be better than it is now had you not lost them, and an NIT bid basically locked in if that didn't happen. So I think B minus is probably fair. I think I'm probably with you on the B minus there, but just sucks, man. It's just a weird mirror of last year. Hopefully, you know, fortunately winning records are the new standard that we're judging this off of with NELP. And so that's obviously a huge positive and very different than several years in a row before that. But now this new standard is set. And so, you know, you want more. That's what happens. And, the coaches want more. Everybody wants to get better all the time. So that's where we're at. So next season, big season, obviously hoping to improve on this one again. If we start 15-2 again and go 17-13 by the end of the year, something's wrong. You know, there's something wrong with how we manage the back half of the season or something like that. But up to now, it seems like a combination of first year, easy schedule early, and then second year injury bug. So we'll see what happens in year three. But I'd say overall, I'm with you. B minus sounds good. Last thing I had on women's basketball, and obviously if something comes out about we're going to a postseason tournament or something, we'll try to hit that next week if we can. But the last thing I've got for now is, mentioned it already, the AAC awards were coming out. Array Young mentioned she made the all freshman team. There were three, like all conference teams, first team, second team, third team, all AAC across all age groups. And Tulsa only had one player make any of those teams. Fortunately, it was first team. Tamaya Poindexter made first team all conference. She was not the unanimous selection. The unanimous choice was from South Florida. Can't remember what her name was. But Tamaya got first team all AAC, only all conference award for the TU women across first team, second team, and third team. I was surprised. Thought Maya Mayberry would be in there. Thought Maddie Biddle had a shot. Was surprised that Poindexter was the only one. But at least she got first team and didn't get bumped down to second team just because of this losing streak recently.
Yeah, Delaney Crawford is the one that I feel like got the is the biggest miss on that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you look at her stats, like 11.3 points per game, 4.7 was rebounds per game, led the team in assists, you know, was shooting 38%, was our best. Yeah, if you look at it from players who played a lot, was our top 3-point percentage shooter. So, I don't know. The fact that she didn't even get a nod to the third team, I think that's a miss.
That does. Feels like one. I think all three of those, I felt like, had a real shot at making one of the teams, at least. But got none of them, unfortunately. So, Tamara holding up the fort. And she was there. Like I'm not going to lie. Honestly, I was kind of surprised she got first team. I'm glad she did. She's clearly extremely talented. And she was there in terms of like points numbers, but she shoots the ball all the time. She gets a lot of points because she takes a freaking ton of shots, the most on the team by far. She didn't have a particularly great 3-point percentage, 28% on the year. I'm sure she's not happy with that. Shot pretty well from the field at 40%. You know, that's nothing amazing, but it's not bad either. So I was I'm so glad that she got the nod, and she leads us in points and rebounds, and we were a pretty solid team. So she deserves it, I think, but I was a little bit surprised just with, you know, knowing that she takes so many shots. I just wonder if they gave it to her because she gets all the points. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe that's not right, but that's how
you can't discount her defensive contribution. Like, she is per game averaging 1.5 blocks as well as a steal.
Yep.
Like, I don't know. I think that's huge. And I think is a big part of why, because she's such a good and talented two-way player.
Yeah, totally agree. And I agree. I think she does she does probably deserve this. It was just in my head that she takes all the shots, gets all the points, and I wonder if that was the reason why. But you're right. The steal a game, block and a half per game, especially on a team that has no paint presence, like that's big. So agree. That's a good call out. Cool. Okay. Anything else on the women? Or are you good to shift gears, I guess, to the men's side of things here?
Yeah, I'm ready to shift.
All right, let's do it. The men have played one game since our last episode. It was also the day after our previous episode. It was on the road at USF. You can probably guess what happened there. It was a loss, 5-24 on the year to end the regular season, 1-17 in the American. None of the rankings have changed except for the Massey across the board for the men. We're still 312 in KenPom, 323 in the net, 293 at Torvik. And we are down five spots in the Massey rankings. So not that much different in terms of the computer numbers. But the team is just as bad as they have been. And we're looking at the conference tournament now, hoping for some magic against Wichita. But let's talk about the South Florida game first. That was on Wednesday, like we mentioned. 72-56 final score in that one. Tulsa loses. That is 11 losses in a row to end the regular season for TU. 1-18 in the past 19 games. That lone win being that Q3 or quad three win against Tulane a month or so ago now. Tough game. We don't have to talk about it that much, Matt. I watched a little bit of it. It got out of hand for a little bit there, and then we kind of came back in, made it a game for a while. But there wasn't that much, I don't think, to go over. Did you have anything specific you wanted to talk about in this one or not really?
Not really. I didn't watch this game at all because it was at the same time as the women's game. Mm. And I was out there. So, I mean, I just kind of followed along and saw that we went on a little bit of a run at one point, I think.
We did. Yeah. The thing was, and I remember tweeting this. I don't remember what the run was, but it was I was laughing about it while tweeting because the run was like 14-3 Tulsa, like a big run. And we were still down by 10 or more. It was like we were down by 25 or something. Went on this nice run. Yeah. So I was like, yeah, 14-3 Tulsa run. Final, or the score is now, you know, whatever it was, Tulsa's down by 10.
Yeah, that looks like that run ended on 19-3 and we were still down by 7 at the end of it.
Hey, so we did. Okay, so we got there though. But I remember
probably,
that's true.
You probably tweeted when it was a 10-point game still.
Yeah. Man, just crazy. Yeah, it was, you're right. I forgot about that little run in there. That was a nice little stretch. And we, like, Brandon Betson hit several in a row. I think Tim Dalger made a few good plays in there in that stretch. And it looks like, yeah, like it looked like for a while that we had a shot at making this a real thing and maybe getting a win to cap off the regular season. And then South Florida came back and they're big and they were hitting shots and we couldn't stop them down the stretch. High scoring second half, 37-36, but couldn't stop him down there. 20 first half points will do that to you for us. So that's how it went. Tough game. Let me look at the box score real quick. I just pulled it up. We shot 36% from three, only turned it over 12 times. So not too bad in the turnover area. We got out rebounded by 10. So yeah, not as bad as some of the games, but not great, obviously.
Ryan, can you remind me, how many teams are there in Division I basketball?
There are, let me count the numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 363 Division I men's basketball teams. What's up?
Do you see our 2% defense and our block percent?
I haven't checked since last week. I know they're both atrocious. One of them we're actually like decent at, right?
Not those two.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so let me guess. Block percentage and 2-point percent defense. Man, I wish I had my notes up from last week so I could at least compare there. I'm just going to throw out some numbers here. I bet in 2-point percent defense, we are 357. In block percentage, we're probably even worse. No, man, that's tough to be worse than that. I'll go 353 for 2-point percentage, 357 for block.
You were right. We were worse in block, but 2-point percent, 360.
Ooh.
362.
Oh, my gosh. Second worst in the whole country.
That's the one you were thinking is good. That's 42.
Which one is?
3-point percent defense.
Okay, yeah. Where are we there?
42.
Okay, gotcha. Man. Oh boy. Yeah, let me pull up KenPom. I haven't looked. I looked at it earlier today, but I forgot to look at like the big rankings. Oof. Oh, yep, there they are. Ooh.
That That 31.2 that we allow is still better than we shoot ourselves from three. That's brutal. That sucks.
Nice. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. It's tough, man. Not looking good. So we go in, we got Wichita. We'll talk about that when we do the conference tournament preview here in a bit. But I've got a higher level question, a future looking question for you, Matt. And it is this. How many players from this current team do you think will still be here on the roster next year? Let me give you some context. You get 13 scholarships for college basketball for the men. I don't know if it's the same for the women, actually. I should have looked that up. But 13 at least for the men. I think we have 11 right now. That is assuming that Peyton Urbancic and Ari Seals are not scholarship. Is that how you remember them? I don't think either of them are.
Yeah, I have no idea. I would guess not.
Let's go with the assumption that they're not, just for the sake of this argument then. So we'll say we have 11 scholarship players. And as far as I know, we only have one player who is out of eligibility after this season, and that is Keyshawn Embry-Simpson. Nikita did his senior day thing this year, but he's a junior as far as I can tell. So I think he still has another year. So 10 scholarship players, like 10 players with the potential option of coming back next season. How many of those 10 do you think are on the team next year?
How many did we sign?
Three high school players have been signed. That's Jared Hall, Matt Reed, Carlos Williams.
Okay.
So if nothing changes, we're at the max.
Right. Which I don't think is going to be the case because I hope that we're going to hit the transfer portal as well.
If that's the case, then it's going to be rough. It's going to be rough next year.
Okay. So Keyshawn's gone. Griffin is gone in my mind.
So Griffin's gone. Are you saying you think he transfers?
Yeah. I wouldn't have thought Pritchard until I feel like you kind of made me lean one like more like he's gone.
I don't know. Maybe he is sick. Who knows, man?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I came out worse after our conversation last week than I went into it with. I would say, are you going to make me give specific names?
If you want to. You don't have to. You could just give a number if you want and we can talk about it.
Like six guys?
That's exactly what I got. So I made a little outline of this for myself, just getting ready for the episode. I think there will be six. Seven with Pritchard. Pritchard is the big unknown. Or he's the only one I don't have at least an opinion on. Obviously, this entire question is unknowns. We're guessing on all of this stuff. My guess, just looking down the roster, Josiah McWright, he's back. This is just my thinking, right? McWright mm-hmm. back. Griffin, I'm with you. I think he transfers somewhere. He's got another year or two, possibly, of eligibility. He's a good player. I could see him transferring, especially with him sitting out the last month. Keyshawn, done, eligibility-wise. Sterling, Guest, and Chapman, I bet he transfers. I don't know. I've just got him as one who I wouldn't be too surprised if he ended up transferring somewhere. I don't know where he'd go. He didn't play much this year. I'm not sure if he could find a landing spot that many places. But that's my guess. I bet he's gone. BB Knight, back. Tim Gallagher, back. Brandon Betson, back. I think Eric Conkle has been extremely happy with all three of those guys. And maybe not Knight in terms of production, but he's a freshman. I think he likes him as a recruit.
Mm-hmm.
Nikita, wouldn't be surprised if he transfers. I've got him as a potential transfer. Pritchard, the big unknown. No idea what's going to happen with him. Dying for him to come back. I still think he's a great player. Hoping he does. But that's a question mark for me. Charles Chukwu, back. Brian Solabonge, back. Chukwu is also kind of an unknown, but he's a freshman as well, so wouldn't be surprised if he's back. So that is six players, McWright, Knight, Dalger, Betson, Chukwu, Solabonge, with a potential seventh in Anthony Pritchard. You add in the three high school recruits, and we are at either 9 or 10 scholarships, which leaves room for at least three transfers for Eric Conkle, which is a good number, I think, without blowing up your entire roster. So that's my guess. I bet I'm with you. I bet we have at least six, possibly seven guys returning next year, which leaves the door open for three or four transfers in the offseason that hopefully can be experienced guys who, you know, that's the thing. Like, the transfer portal is so finicky, man, especially when you're a team that just went 5-20 or whatever our record was. Like, who's going to, you know, I know he's got good relationships with players around the country. Maybe that's all it takes, but it's going to be tough to get the guys we need to come in this season. But that's what coaches, do, man. They set the attitude and they can get you fired up to come play for them, in hopes that you can turn the ship around. So that's my guess. Three transfers coming in along with three true freshmen and six, possibly seven returning guys. And I think that if that happens, I think that there is possibility of significant improvement. If those are the guys that stay and we pull in three transfers and, you know, maybe two of them are, you know, actually hit and have a good impact. You never know with transfers, but that'd be the best case, I think.
Yeah. I feel like we had very similar thoughts in terms of guys. I won't go through my list. I'll just say, like, my numbers game was somebody wasn't going to be coming back, whether or not they wanted to leave or whether or not they, it was going to be a mutual party.
Yeah. Right.
And that was between like Gaston, McWright.
Yeah. And it kills me to say, like, well, I think McWright's going to be, I think Conkle freaking loves McWright. I also love McWright, but Gaston Chapman kills me to talk about him like this. Because, man, that guy, he plays hard. He's always got a big smile on his face. He plays with fire. I really like him. I like him as a player, but he just doesn't have the shooting percentage. He doesn't have the skill, like the skill parts that I think we're looking for, unfortunately. And if he comes back, proves me wrong, would love it. Want nothing more than for him to be an absolute baller on this team, but just haven't seen it yet. And maybe, I don't know. I agree. I think he's maybe one of them that's like, we like him, but Conkle, you know, comes to him and says, hey, man, we're not going to, if you come back, we're just not going to have much playing time for you or something like that. And so he looks around. I don't know. I again, don't want that to happen, obviously, but that's one that I could see.
Yeah. So like this game against South Florida is the first time in his career that he's ever had double digit points. And so I agree. I like him. He is always like, similar to, I think, Tim Dalger, he plays with a lot of intensity and a lot of passion, sometimes too much.
Yeah, that's true.
But he's just not as good at finishing, and that's just going to hold him back.
I tweeted about this during the game because I was so surprised that it happened. We ran a set out-of-bounds play for Sterling. I don't know if it was supposed to go this way or if he just got wide open. It looked like a set play for Sterling Gaston Chapman to get him an open three. The man shoots, I looked this up after the play happened, he shoots 8% from the 3-point line. He doesn't shoot him very often, so like I don't know what the actual like attempts versus makes are, but he shoots 8%. We got him an open three and he nailed it. He just absolutely swished this thing. I couldn't believe it. I was losing my mind. But yeah, so his first time double digits in his career. I didn't know that. That's a good call out. So nice game from him for sure.
Yeah, double checking. Yeah.
You were double checking.
Double checking that I was right on the career, and I was.
Let me look at his. Let me pull up our
3 for 26 this season.
3 for 26. Okay, that sounds about right. So his. Well, let me see.
He bumped it up to almost 12%.
Yeah, I was just gonna look how much that moved up. That's so funny. Nice. Yeah. So yeah, he's one. Nikita, I don't know. Like he hasn't played much. He's been dealing with injuries all year. In quotes, injuries. Who knows? Like I think they probably are actual injuries, but who knows? He's just been out. Seems like the whole season. So wouldn't be surprised if he's not back. Sam Griffin, obviously, is the biggest loss of that group. He is our most explosive offensive player this season in terms of like potential to score a bunch of points. Really had a tough back half of the schedule here in terms of production, which is kind of what happened last season as well. So, and then he's been out for the last month. So it seems like he's kind of done. I remember when Kelly Hines interviewed him at the end of the year, last year, or maybe it was right when Eric Conkle got hired or something. And she asked him, it stuck in my mind because she asked him some question about like, you know, how do you like Tulsa? Like the city, like, how do you like living here? How do you like the community, you know, playing for the team? And that's a softball, you know, that's a softball question to you to get some fan, you know, enthusiasm around your name. You know, just say you love the city. It's so easy. But he was like, how I'm remembering this answer was a very deadpan response to Kelly that was, I'm just here to play basketball. And that was it. And I was like, okay. I mean, whether I understand if that's true, whether or not that's true, you can answer that question way better. You don't have to tell the truth. Like say, you know, I, maybe that, maybe, you know, I should appreciate him being honest, but, if you want to get some, like, you know, build up some karma in the fan base, you know, or happiness, just be like, yeah, you know, I like Tulsa. It's a friendly town. It's a nice place. I like being here. Something, but just like the, I'm here to play basketball. That was it. Just, I never forgot that. And it seems like he may be done. I don't know. I hope not. He's a good player as well. So it's a bummer.
I think that interview is what made people so surprised that he took his name out of the transfer portal.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, so he's good enough. He's definitely one that could find a place to go. You know, whether that's, I doubt it would be like a high major or anything like that, but, you know, he could find a Tulsa equivalent or something around there. No, for sure. Like, he's a good player. I think everybody recognizes that. So we'll see what happens with him. If he comes back, that's great. I'm sure we could use him. I know we could use him, but he seems like one that's probably out the door. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But if it goes like we think, we'll have room for 3 transfers at least, possibly 4. And that sets the stage for at least another an interesting season next season with some new faces. That's the potential for 6 new faces. And of those 6, probably 4 or 5 of them will actually get meaningful playing time. Which is that's a vastly different team than we have right now. So that'll be exciting. All right, let's turn our attention toward the conference tournament briefly. Don't want to spend too much time on it. I don't think either of us are realistically expecting a deep run here or anything, but we can talk about the first game at least. And that is Tulsa taking on Wichita State in Havoc in the Heartland. RIP to that rivalry, just like all of our other rivalry names. But that game is on Thursday, 6 p.m. ESPNU. Winner takes on number 3 Tulane the next day at 8 o'clock, also on ESPNU. Wichita, we lost to them both times in the regular season. Surprise, surprise. Lost the 2 regular season matchups. One of them, very close, single-digit game, 4-point game on the road. And then we came back, got them at home, lost to them by double digits, lost by 11. Wichita's up to number 104 in KenPom, 108 in the net, 87 in Torvik, 96 in Massey, so hovering right around 100 on average in pretty much everything. They're on the up. You look at their last several weeks, they've gone upward trend in pretty much every computer over that time span. Won 4 of their last 6 games. The 2 that they lost there were both extremely competitive games, and both of those losses came against the 2 best teams in the league in Houston and Memphis. So they're looking good. KenPom has this game. Wichita by 13 points. That's more than we lost to them in either of the regular season games. They say it's hard to beat the same team 3 times. We just talked about that. Matt, I don't think we'll win it, but do you think we cover that 13?
Well, last year they couldn't beat us 3 times. So, you know, true. Karma, or not karma, history would indicate that we will win. That being said, no, I don't think we cover.
You think we're phoning it in, huh? We're getting beat by 25.
I don't think we're phoning it in. I just don't think that we, I don't know. It's hard to say because I don't like saying it, but I mean, we're bad. And so Wichita State is not bad. And I don't think it'll be as close as 13 points. I think we'll lose by like 15.
You know what? I'm going to say we cover that 13. We lost to them by 11 and 4 in the regular season and by 4 on the road, you know? So, I mean, I know in the 4-point game we had Sam Griffin still and probably Pritchard as well. But, I don't know. Maybe that is the right number.
The last time we played them was February 5th. We talked about how much we just nosedived from February, like the first part of February onward. So we're a worse team now than we were the last time we played them, I think.
Yeah. And like I just said to you, Wichita is on the up. Like back in when we lost to them, let me see when the last time we lost to them was Wichita State played Tulsa. Last time we played them, they were 120. They're up to 110 or 112 or whatever they are right now.
104.
104, thank you. And then what is the time before that? They were 116. And they got as low as 120 a couple weeks ago, 130 right before that. And now they're up to 104, like you're saying. So they are definitely looking good recently. They got some good players. We know about them. We've played them twice now this season. Craig Porter's been there for several years now. He is a dog for them, leads them in everything except for points, and he's second in points. He leads them in rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks. He is second in points behind their other big-time offensive talent, junior transfer guard from Georgia, Jaquan Walton. So those two, the electric guys for them. They got some big dudes who did some damage to us before. James Rojas, big, bulky guy. Only 6'6", so not hugely tall, but he's got some mass. He's a big dude. Their big, like, shot blocker tall guy is Kenny Poto, who we've also played against for the last couple seasons. 6'11", big guy down there. So they're a talented team. They're not making the NCAA tournament or anything like that, but they've got some talent on that squad. They're figuring themselves out late, it seems like. You just look at their record here in conference play. It's like basically win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss. They can't get two in a row. Every now and then they have a two game streak. But they had 0 3-game win streaks the entire season. It's just been up and down the whole stretch of the way. And that's how you get to 16-14 like they are, 9-9 in the league. It's pretty crazy. But yeah, I still can't decide if I'm over or under that 13, if I think we're going to cover that or not. Unfortunately, I think you're probably right. I think we probably do lose by more than 13. I think Tulsa wants to get the season over with, get home. I don't think they're going to, like, you know, quote unquote, phone it in, like we said. I think the guys who were out there will be playing hard, but half the guys aren't out there at all. So it makes it hard to really to do your damage there. So you're probably right. We probably lose by more than 13, and that'll make me sad. But at least once that game's done, I'll have 5 minutes of being sad, and then I'll be on the lookout for next season, which hopefully will be much more fun.
And to spite us again, we're going to win it all. Like, the more we
give it
talk
to me,
about
baby,
how we're not going to, we're going to, like, Summit Houston is going to be like, you know what? We already won the regular season title, and everybody knows that's the more meaningful one. So they're just going to, like, somehow wing it so that we win. And somehow this is all to spite UConn. That's yeah. What's going on in my head.
Yes. UConn's definitely involved in this scenario somehow. Did you see, by the way, speaking of Houston, the Houston-Memphis game yesterday or 2 days ago, whenever that, I think it was yesterday.
I saw it was very, very close. I got an Apple game alert at one point.
Nice. Yeah, it was a hell of a game. Regular season finale for those guys and for both of them. And Houston-Memphis has been spicy for the last like 3 or 4 years. You know, those games, they've always been close, always dramatic. It's crazy. Like, regardless of how dominant Houston is and Memphis has been so up and down, those games, they always play each other well. I didn't get to watch this whole game. Unfortunately, I was out for most of the day. But man, it was a hell. I mostly just caught the highlights and I saw the buzzer beater. So the buzzer beater is what I wanted to talk about. It was Memphis, or Houston, I mean, down. It might have been tied. I think it was tied. And Houston drives down the court. You know, they got 5 seconds on the clock. They got to come from the opposite baseline. And it's Jamal Shedd, their point guard. Just absolute dog out there all the time. And he's got Kendrick Davis, I think, on him. And he drives, you know, cuts in kind of from the right corner. Or not right corner, but like the right top of the key. And gets a little push off. Pretty much gets away with a push off. He like drives in a little bit and then hesitates and pushes off to get an open look at two. And he definitely pushed off. I don't know if it was bad enough to call it in the moment. Like, it's probably not a foul you call that late in the game, and it wasn't egregious, so it was probably fine. But definitely pushed off a bit. Shedd gets an open look, nails the two, time expires while the ball's in the air, and knocks it down. So they get the buzzer-beating win again to make another awesome game in Houston-Memphis. But then, you know, that pretty much locks up a number one seed for Houston going into the NCAA tournament. Okay, cool. Anything else on basketball? We got a few non-basketball topics we can get into, but we can wrap up basketball if you've got something else.
Yeah, nope, nothing else for me.
Sweet. So we got three other things to look at. We can go in whatever order you want here, Matt. I wanted to talk about Denaric Prince and the NFL Combine. I wanted to talk about the new special teams coordinator. Hell yeah, we got another one. And I wanted to talk about potentially conference realignment stuff. So any order you want to go in there?
Let's go football. Well, let's start with Prince.
Wow, those are all football. I didn't. Well, I guess realignment is both, but sparked
it's
by football.
Of football. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So did you say Prince in the end? Start with them. Okay. Sounds good. Yeah. So NFL Combine, it ended today. Today was the last day. I think it started on February 28th or sometime around there. And honestly, wasn't really paying attention. I knew Generic Prince was in there. I knew he was participating. Hadn't really been watching how he was doing. Today being the last day, they did all of their metrics, or a lot of their like metric stuff, today, and the drills and everything like that were before that. So, metrics day is always like the big one. That's when, you know, the headlines get made and people come out with their judges of like who was the best and who was the worst and who was a flop and all of that. Generic Prince lit it up across the board. Literally nobody saying he was underwhelming or anything. He's only surprised people in the best way. And it started off with his 40-yard dash time. 4.41 40-yard dash following him. Like, literally, the next guy to participate in it was star running back from Texas, Bijan Robinson. Ran a 4.47. So he goes first, or he's right before Bijan, beats him in that, and then lights up pretty much every other thing. So that we mentioned the 40-yard dash. He had a 10-yard split of 1.53, a 10-foot-4 vertical jump, a 9.84 broad jump. Those are great numbers. Next Gen Stats, which is like the NFL's stat arm and also sponsored by AWS or whatever, you probably have seen their commercials and stuff. They had Generic Prince, not Texas' Bijan Robinson, not Illinois' Chase Brown, not Alabama's Jahmyr Gibbs, not Texas A&M's Devon Achane. Generic Prince, most athletic running back in the combine. They had it broken out, and those four guys followed him from Texas, Illinois, Alabama, and A&M. That is insanity. And also, A&M is where he transferred from. So he's got Devon Achane back there at A&M behind him after he leaves A&M and comes to Tulsa, and he beats him in all the combine metrics. That is so sweet. Still feel like we kind of underutilized him this past football season. Because, man, last, like two seasons ago now, he had some just – he had some big moments this season too. Don't get me wrong, but like he had some absolutely head like neck bangers. Like just look over, you can't believe that's a dude playing for Tulsa. Man, he just lit it up. So wish we would have used him a little bit better this season. Wish we would have been better in general this season. But man, Generic Prince, what a bright spot. And I think he locked himself up as a draft pick, going into the draft here soon. So I'm excited for him. And that'll be what, five straight years of draft pick and, three, four, five, I can't remember, of draft picks for Tulsa.
Oh, man, that's going to be because Travis and Robinson went the same year.
Were they the same? Okay, maybe maybe it is only four then. Yeah, so it was, if they were the same, then it was them, and then it was somebody, and then Collins, and then Smith. So that would be 4 years. There was somebody outside of, who am I missing? Got drafted. Maybe it's only three. No, it must be four. Here we go. Wikipedia. Three. Yeah, you're right. So, man, there was nobody in between. Yeah, we got all the people, though. Reggie Robinson and Travis Gibson were the same year, like we said, 2020. Collins in 21, and then Tyler Smith and Chris Paul. I forgot Chris Paul, round seven, yeah, last season. And so this will be the fourth year, assuming Generic Prince does get drafted. Haven't looked at any mocks, don't know where he's supposed to go or anything like that. But three seasons, potentially four seasons in a row, NFL draft pick for Tulsa. And it just blows my mind, man. I mean, maybe we were just there in the dog days. I mean, I'm looking at the years here, but like, I remember studying for finals. The draft is always around finals time. And I wasted hours in the library actually not studying for finals, just watching the NFL draft, waiting for Dane Evans to get picked or Kevin Lucas to get picked or Kyrus Garrett. Thank you. I was like, who's the really big receiver? One of them, and none of them, 2 years in a row, neither of them got picked. I wasted probably 6 hours in there just watching the draft and seeing nothing happen. So now we got three straight seasons, potentially a fourth season coming up of Tulsa players in the draft across offense and defense, and that is so nice. I am jealous of I get to participate in it now, but it would have been fun if that happened while we were in school.
Yeah, I feel like it's wild just looking back on this season, because I don't think anybody expected anybody to get drafted from this roster. I won't say didn't expect anybody, that's not fair, and I don't mean it how it sounds necessarily, but you look back, you know, Tyler Smith, Zaven Collins, these are guys people are like, yes, like first round, huge picks. And then it was like, we didn't have that this season. And I think even, I don't know, I'm not surprised. I think Generic Prince is awesome. That Temple game will go down as like just a dominant performance from him, and I think is definitely a the fact that that took place in an NFL stadium. You know, it's a good sign for him. So yeah, I again, like, this is like a pleasant surprise, or maybe not surprise again, but just nice to see that he killed it and is, you know, doing well for himself, at least in terms of exposure.
Yeah, I hope he makes it. So I was just looking at Underdog Dynasty, and they did a full 7-round mock draft after the combine. Didn't have him in there. And I'm looking at draftcountdown.com right now, and I'm on rounds 4 to 7, and I already looked at 1 to 3, and he's not in there either. So I don't know. Maybe, how are you in the combine? You excel, and you're still not in there. I don't know. Maybe it hasn't been updated yet. But anyway, maybe it's not as likely as I was thinking. That would be a bummer. This was not Underdog Dynasty. This is just a SB Nation site. Anyway, sorry. But still, not no generic prints. And this is updated today at 11 a.m. So we'll see. Maybe it's very much up in the air.
Yeah. And it could be like a momentum kind of thing. You know, it starts here, and then it's just how well does he take advantage of that between now and April?
Totally. Here's a do you have the Wikipedia up of all the draft picks or anything like that?
From Tulsa? I do not.
Okay, trivia for you.
Okay.
Who was before Reggie Robinson in 2020, who was the last Tulsa football player to get drafted?
Can you give me a range of years that they would have played at TU?
Yes, between... how much? We'll go between 2008 and 2011.
I just, like, I can't think of anybody like Dexter McCoyle.
No, he didn't get drafted.
Okay. Then I don't know.
2011 was the draft. Charles Clay.
Oh, okay. I should have known that. I was thinking, I was like, again, we talked about this last. I feel like Clay was longer.
I know. Yeah, it's true.
God, okay, that's stupid. I feel stupid. I should have said that.
It's fine. I want to ask you one more, but I'm not going to be able to. I wanted to ask you how many players in Tulsa. Well, so I'll just ask you, and then I'll count it while you're thinking. How many total Tulsa Golden Hurricane football players have been drafted in the NFL draft? And then I need to count them. So take your time, or maybe we can just pause it here, and we'll cut it in later.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's going to take me a while. There's a pretty decent number in here.
Yeah, are you just like... Okay.
I don't know a better way to count them other than literally going row by row. Okay, have the number.
Okay.
And I'll give you, because I also have to give myself a plus or minus 5 here, because I was scanning pretty quick, so I may have missed or added several. But we'll go plus or minus 5 total Tulsa players that have been drafted ever. Their year range, 1936 to 2022.
Okay. So knowing that there were probably a lot more when there was a larger draft, because it's what, 7 rounds now, but it used to be like more than 10. And the fact that we were good in the 90s. And okay. So I'm going to go much higher than my initial. I'm going to go 79.
You are off by a lot.
Really? Is it higher? Lower?
Much higher.
Much higher. Okay.
I'll give you 2 more guesses to get within 20.
To get within 20. Damn.
I'm going
to
raise the plus or minus.
Okay. 113.
Higher.
Damn. Okay. This is good.
Yeah.
141.
177.
Damn.
177. Plus or minus 5. But yeah, man. Like I'm just scanning through the Wikipedia thing here. Like 1945, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 players taken. And this is probably where you got off here, Matt. You were right that the draft used to have more than 7 rounds. 1945, there were at least 28 because we had somebody else taking it. I don't know how many picks were in each round. But yeah, like 1945, we had somebody pick number 6, round 28, or 1944, pick number 8, round 28. So yeah, lots of guys picked back in like the 40s and 50s. That's why it was taking me so long to read all this stuff. 70s and 80s, good numbers. 90s, pretty good numbers most years in there. Then you get into the 2000s, and it's like, you know, maybe one a year. And then many, many skips of years in there. Pretty crazy. There's no way I would have guessed 177. No way. No way I would have ever thought it was that high. It's wild. But yeah, cool. So yeah, shouts to Prince. Hopefully he makes it, man. I thought after that and seeing him at the combine, it would be way more likely than these mock drafts not having him in there. But maybe I'm missing something. So we will see. I know he played for a mediocre Tulsa team and didn't, you know, turn a lot of heads during the season. So maybe you're right. Maybe it'll just be a momentum thing and he'll pick up steam as the weeks go on. Okay. On to the second football thing here. Report from Kelly Hines. No, from the Tulsa World. No official announcement from TU or anything like that yet, as far as I know. We have a new special teams coach, Ricky Brown, who left. He left for Navy, so we'll be playing against him, which will be kind of fun. He's gone, so the question was, okay, who are we going to – are we going to have a special teams coordinator, or is that just going to be a position we don't backfill? Because, you know, we didn't have one for forever with Philip Montgomery. The answer has been – or the question has been answered, and that is Joe Bolden is the new special teams coordinator. He was at Nevada last year, was at Ohio State with Kevin Wilson before that. Some little more, I don't know that much about him, but the little other background I have is he played linebacker at Michigan during his playing days, and I think he played up until like 2012 or 2013, so he's a pretty young dude. The other staff/positions he's had, he was the special teams quality control analyst, or one of the special teams quality control analysts at USC. That was his first kind of relatively big coaching position. Defensive quality control at Ohio State. That's what he was doing under Kevin Wilson. And then the special teams coordinator, his first coordinator role, and also outside linebackers coach at Nevada most recently. So he is coming from there. He's got position coach. He's got 1 year of experience being a coordinator of special teams, which is what he's doing for us. Not sure if he's going to also do help with linebackers in some way here. Would be surprised if he didn't, just because he played that in college. So I'm sure he'll be involved there in some way. But yeah, so we have a special teams coordinator. It's Joe Bolden, no longer Ricky Brown, which is good. I think it's good to have one. It's good to have somebody on the staff that has that responsibility written down. You know, it's on that person if things don't go well, which makes it more likely that you're going to be pretty good at special teams. So I'm all for it. Was glad that we still got one. Was a little bit worried that would just be a spot that we lost. But fortunately, not the case. So any thoughts on Joe Bolden, Matt? I know, you know, he's a newcomer. He's a new guy. He doesn't have much of a history, but any thoughts on him, or just happy that we got him?
I think just happy that we got him and that we weren't treating the loss as a sign to just not have one. I'm glad that that Kevin Wilson recommitted and doubled down to ensuring that we had somebody here.
Yeah, big open question is still DC. Still no DC. Said last
that
week,
one, that
running
one
out of time.
Yeah,
no DC. I mean, maybe we're just gonna go all offense, like we talked about last week. That was the one. I mean, if it's gonna happen, it has to happen now. I mean, we talked last episode saying it's got to be this week, like the week that is now done, because spring ball is like soon. It's the end of the month, and we don't have a defensive coordinator. Like practices are gonna start here soon, so. It's weird. I thought we'd have one by now. Sign of the times, probably, of how tough it is to get a DC this late in the game. But that's the situation we are stuck with. And it's going to be weird. It's got to happen this week. If it doesn't happen this week, we're not going to have one. There's no option. So we'll see. It's a weird, weird scenario. Yeah. And then final thing, at least for me, is just some conference realignment stuff that's going on. Just wanted to bring it up, see what you thought. Big 12 reports are coming out, are rumored to be looking at 4 Pac-12 schools. This has been a rumor for a while, and the Pac-12 like put the clamps down saying this is absolutely not happening. I mean, all these discussions started like a year ago, the same time that the Big 12, you know, Texas and Oklahoma announced they were leaving or whatever. But now it's back on the table, apparently. Colorado, Utah, Arizona and Arizona State. Sounds like they're all being talked to by the Big 12. What talking to means is up in the air, you know, how serious that is. The consensus, it feels like, from the media, like in The Athletic and on ESPN, they're all kind of saying the same thing, and that's that it mostly sounds like it depends on how the Pac-12's new media deal shakes out. That has been an ongoing discussion and debate for coming on a year now as well. They are going to have to make a new deal here in the next, by the end of March, pretty much by the latest. And if they don't, then it sounds more and more likely that those schools will just leave, because it doesn't seem like a good answer is coming for the Pac-12 in terms of media rights. So it's going to be strange, man. Just something to call out. I was looking at Shehan Jayaraja from CBS Sports. He wrote a good story about it today. And his kind of final paragraph was, for the four corner schools, those being Colorado, Utah, Arizona, and Arizona State, for them to consider leaving the Pac-12, it would likely take either one, true uncertainty over the Pac-12 media rights, like I'm saying, being if they can't make a deal still by the end of March and they got nothing, that's a bad sign. And so maybe those schools, even with no deal being made yet, will just bail. Or two, a significant revenue gap between the deal reached by the Pac-12 and the one that the Big 12 has already locked up, which looks pretty good. So, you know, there's two scenarios there that result in the Pac-12 losing four more schools after already losing two this year to the Big 10 in UCLA and USC. So drama for the Pac-12, but that means potentially, and even if it doesn't happen, more drama for Tulsa. And I'm coming around to that because the Pac-12 is, you know, more realignment stuff, rumored to be looking at not just SMU, which we had heard about before, but also San Diego State and potentially even Tulane. Like, that is a real story that's happening. And they have, like, you know, I have my own Tulane source. You can probably guess who it is, who knows the Tulane athletic department. And he was just telling me that, like, that the athletic department has at least been in communication with the Pac-12. What that does not mean anything is in stone, anything's even been offered or anything like that. It just means they've talked. But the Pac-12 looking at Tulane, or, and, you know, they're probably looking at a bunch of other schools too. I'm telling you, Matt, if we and let me say one more thing. If we I don't know if the Pac-12 does this regardless of whether they lose schools to the Big 12 or they're going to do it either way. Like, are they only going to do it if they lose schools? They're going to do it regardless. I don't know. Regardless of that, in my mind, if we lose SMU and Tulane, in addition to losing Houston and UCF, like, those are four schools that Tulsa has a lot of history with. And that, like, I look forward, especially every year, to playing SMU and Tulane. Those are two of my favorite schools to play each season in any sport. And I would be, I was already bummed we were losing Houston, because that's a fun one. And I like talking to the podcast guys, but SMU and Tulane are much more like the TU fit of, like, the kind of school that they are, you know, generally. And I always look forward to playing. I would be so bummed if we lost both those as well. Really, really hope that doesn't happen. It sounds like SMU is much more likely than Tulane for the Pac-12 scenario, but still, man, it's pretty wild.
Yeah, I don't understand the point of conferences anymore. Like, all of this just is, like, conferences seem so meaningless because, like, why? They all started as regional, you know, groupings of schools, obviously. And, you know, have a New Orleans school join the Pacific Athletic Conference along with a Texas school, like, in the same. Okay, I can kind of see, like, UCF and all that, but I was like, the Pac-12 school is going to the Big 10. Like, it's all just so stupid. And so, yeah, I agree. I mean, I should have been prepared for this inevitability based on last year, how everything shook out. And just, like, this conference is just going to be essentially a holding group for everybody as they try to move up to one of the bigger ones. Like, that's all it already kind of was that. And now it's just that on steroids, because it's like, all right, we lost Houston, UCF, Cincinnati last year, and now all of a sudden, you know, all these other schools are not to say that, you know, like Tulane doesn't seem quite as much as I feel like SMU seems a little bit more like, yeah, let's go. Like we should be at a higher level, which I debatable.
yeah.
So, but that's just going to be, it already was turning into just a new Conference USA. And so this would just kind of be the nail in the coffin.
Totally
there.
Is now. Yeah.
And so, you know, it would just be a matter of time till the bigger schools in the conference end up leaving. So like South Florida, once they turn it around, and it's like, you know, they've been bad, but they're not going to be forever. They are a big enough school that they're going to eventually figure it out.
Yep.
And so then they'll be gone. And then like ECU has a huge alumni base, a huge, like, ECU is another one that it's like, all right, then they're gone. And so it's just, we're going to be back where we were in 2013. And it just kind of sucks.
But hey, it makes you appreciate whatever moves were made to get Tulsa as part of the American in the first place. Because if we weren't, who knows if we would have gotten invited this time around, and maybe we're stuck in the wasteland that is the new Conference USA, right? I mean, that is the worst case scenario, is that this American jump never happened, which I'm so glad it did for the reasons I just said, but also because that was an extremely fun run. Like that league, when it was at its full strength, and even after losing UConn and everything, was just awesome. Like Tulsa to be in that group, a bunch of great schools, a bunch of competitive schools. We had rivalries with many of them from historically that, you know, some of them had got reignited when we got put back together. So, man, it was just such an awesome like span of 10 years there where this happened. Unfortunately, it's all going away now, which is a huge bummer. But if that didn't happen, we'd be stuck with Western Kentucky in no man's land. And like that's not where you want to be.
So, you know, you go back a couple of years where people were kept saying Tulsa should get rid of D1 football. Like, I don't think there was anything necessarily true, like, determined to those. And I think Brad Carson's kind of explained that as well. But, you know, if we don't have this TV deal money from joining the American, how different do our athletics look?
Seriously.
Like, are we renovating basketball? Are we putting that much effort into football and stuff? Like, I can only imagine what it would be like now. But then also on the flip side, like, maybe we'd be more competitive in some of those sports.
Why? If we didn't renovate the things?
We would have won the conference in basketball a couple times, I think. I'm saying, like, we would have been one of the better teams in a worse conference.
That's fair. Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, I don't know. I think Derek Gregg was still the AD, I think, when we made this move. I think there was an AD from, like, 2012 and earlier. Pretty sure Gregg got hired in 2013, and we joined the American in 2014. So he was the one that made this happen in some way. Because remember, Tulsa was not in the initial batch. I don't remember the specifics of how this worked with the American. I don't think they were all announced at first. Like, I don't think it was, this is the scenario I don't think happened. I don't think that the American was being formed, these are going to be the schools, and then also Tulsa and ECU and Tulane or whoever the next batch were are going to be joining next year. I think it was announced with these schools, and somehow we finagled our way in there in like the next year, right? And maybe that's not true. Maybe they did announce them all at once. I don't remember that far back. But if it was the case that we were not part of the plan originally, and then we lost Louisville or whatever, and they had to make changes, whatever strings were pulled to get us in that second batch, huge, huge deal. Like what you're saying, so much money was made for TU because of that deal compared to what we had at Conference USA, especially when we got the new media deal a few years back with the American. It's just that makes a monstrous difference. And could have, you know, maybe it's dramatic, but it feels like it could have saved a sport or two from TU from being dropped if that doesn't happen. So pretty massive. Yeah. So there you go. Cool stuff. Man, throwback to memory lane right there when that happened. Because we were sophomores, right? 2014 is when Tulsa joined. The American started in 2013 when we were freshmen. So our sophomore year, we would have made that switch. Yeah, I remember the homecoming. The homecoming shirts that year were like all American, et cetera, or something like that. Fun stuff. Cool, man. Okay. Anything else you want to talk about during this show, or are we good to punt it to next week? And by then, we will know the scenario with the women's team and what they're doing. We'll know what happened in the conference tournament for the men, and we can look to the future.
Yeah. I think we've got some questions that we need to answer.
Sure. So, I can talk about the new thing too. So we added a website, a button to our website, thegoldenhuntercast.com, to submit a question. And the reason is twofold. One, Twitter kind of sucks these days, and who knows how long we're going to be on there if it continues to get worse. But two, one of the longstanding issues with us only being on Twitter is that not everybody who listens to this podcast has a Twitter account. And so when we field questions, we always only do that on Twitter. And if you don't have a Twitter, but you listen to the show, you're not submitting questions, right? And so simple solution is just like, okay, put this on the website, or also have a separate social media account on Facebook, which I don't really want to do. So the website was the answer. So we have a button on there now. If you go there at thegoldenhuntercast.com, you'll see right at the top, big blue button says ask a question for the show. It's also on the podcast page. It's just a quick little form. Ask what your question is and what your name is. Your name is optional. You don't have to put it in there if you want it to be anonymous. So we have this now. So if you have questions going forward, would prefer if they were through the website, but if you're on Twitter, obviously we'll try to still answer them if you send them on Twitter. It's just harder on Twitter because sometimes those get lost in the weeds because Twitter is just a ongoing feed of stuff, and it can be hard to keep track of those things and it's like capture them right at the moment that they're submitted. If you submit it to the website, they come to our internal Slack, the one like me and Matt look at, and we have a dedicated little channel in there where only the questions will show, and makes it real easy to see them. So if you can submit them through the website going forward, and we will pull questions from there first and then go to Twitter secondarily. So anyway, yeah, to test this out, I had my mom submit a test question, and she sent some. So we can, I think everybody knows who listens to us why our mascot is the Golden Hurricane, but to answer my, I'll take the first one, Matt, and then you can take the second one. The first one is, why is your mascot the Golden Hurricane? From my sweet mother, Carolyn. And it's a long story, my mom. The answer is basically I'm going to get the year wrong, Matt, but you can find it while I'm talking. We wanted to be the Golden Tornadoes, and that was the initial pitch from Coach Dry. I should have prepared for this. I don't remember the name. Whoever the coach was way back wanted to be the Golden Tornadoes, but he also wanted to be a unique name, like one that wasn't taken already. And unfortunately, the Golden Tornadoes were taken by Georgia Tech. The parlance that Tulsa's website uses is they shifted meteorologically away from the Golden Tornadoes toward the Golden Hurricane because it looked like we were rolling through opponents like a hurricane or something like that. So that's where Golden Hurricane came from. Former co-host Pat Fox likes to say it's because of the Dust Bowl, which I think is also a pretty good explanation. Honestly, I kind of prefer that one, but we don't lean into that at all as a university, so that's not the correct answer. The correct answer is the meteorological shift away from the already taken Golden Tornadoes and toward today's Golden Hurricane. So that is why we are the Golden Hurricane. Part two of her question was, whatever happened to Martin's Igbanu? And she asked that because Igbanu was a favorite of hers way back when. She got a picture with him at one of the basketball games in Tulsa, and ever since then has always looked at Martin's Igbanu very fondly. So whatever happened to Martin's Igbanu, Matt?
Yeah, so Igbanu played at Tulsa from 2016 to 2020. His senior season was the year we had a share of the title for the American Athletic Conference, but there was no postseason, if you may recall. COVID was in full swing right during basketball. Canceled our trip to Fort Worth, where we were going to go watch us win the whole damn thing, which was a bummer. But since then, Martin Zigbanu went and is playing professional basketball in France. He's played for a couple teams. Right now, he plays for the Caen, C-A-E-N, but it's French, so it's probably like Caen Basket.
Beautiful club, accent.
Which is like the third level of professional basketball in France. So that's what he's up to currently.
Very nice. Very nice. Good stuff. And we've got an anonymous one here, so we'll answer this one as well, and we'll close the show on this very TU-specific question right here. And we'll start with you, Matt.
Okay.
What is your favorite form of potato?
Okay. I'll answer this two ways. One, if it's like potato versus sweet potato versus some other random thing, I'm just going to go give me a gold potato. Two, if it's the way it's prepared, potatoes au gratin.
Oh, baby. That was, that's always, I change my answer on this all the time. I know who asked this question. It was my lovely wife, Emma. She loves asking this question. So thank you for the two people in my family that submitted questions to our website for this one. Please, somebody else, ask a question so I feel good about making this button. But anyway, au gratin, I get asked this one a lot, or I'm in the room when this question is asked very often. Au gratin is a really good one. I love a good breakfast potato, like the little cubes, you know, that are, if they're prepared well, they're nice and soft, but also really salty. And I like those. Those are probably my top two. I'll go with breakfast potato for today, 'cause that feels really good right now. But yeah, au gratin, tough to beat those too.
There's something about the way Tally's prepares their breakfast potatoes that are just like full of grease and like crispy on the edges.
Ooh, baby.
That is just like, oh, I love that. And I love a good cup of their terrible coffee. Like, good.
Satisfying. It's gritty.
Coffee. Yeah. Sorry. Apologies for the language, but like, that's what it is. And it's great.
Shout out to third place here. The humble French fry. Hard to beat. I'll eat a French fry any day long. I feel like that's kind of a cop-out answer, but French fries are great.
Well, and I feel like French fry just opens up a whole nother can of worms, because there's like, what type of French fry are you talking about?
It's true. And it's true. Like, that is the whole world on itself right there.
So
a discussion for another time. Someone ask us what our favorite kind of French fry is. We can go down that road. TheGoldenHerocast.com if you want to ask that question. Okay. All right. Let's call it there. Fun episode. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the show. Make sure, if you're not already, follow the show, subscribe to the show, whatever the terminology that your podcast player uses. Do that in your player of choice. Leave us a rating and review on that player. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, nice reviews. Those would be great. Really do help. I'm trying to get some more reviews up there going into the off season, because the more reviews, the more likely Apple Podcasts or Spotify is to say, if you search Tulsa Golden Hurricane, the more likely our podcast is to show up. So it does matter. They use reviews to surface those. So please do, if you can, we'd really appreciate it. We do all this for free. So if you want to support us outside of just being nice and leaving a review, you can help us out financially as well. You can find those ways on thegoldenhurricast.com/support. We got a few ways over there. And finally, you can find us on Twitter at Golden Hurricast, or you can send us an email, and that email address is thegoldenhurricast@gmail.com. Once again, I will plug the new Ask a Question button. If you want us to answer your question on the podcast here, that's the best way to do it going forward, especially with Twitter being so weird these days. So keep an eye on the website, submit a question anytime. We'll try to get to it as best we can on the podcast. And that is all for this week. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Stay golden.